Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Pitch Talks here at the lovely Sport Gallery in the distillery in Toronto. We're thrilled to have you all here. We are the first panel. My name's Mike Wilner. I'm with the Blue Jays Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm the guy that yells at people after every game. On my immediate left, Nick Ashburn, Yahoo Sports. You can read his fine work on the interwebs and stuff. Shai Davidi of Sportsnet. You can read his fine work on the internets and stuff, and you can buy his book here, too, The Big 50, a wonderful read, highly recommended to one and all. We are not Keith Law, but Keith Law will be here later, and he will entertain you later, but we will entertain you now. We'll take questions and engage and do all sorts of wonderful things, but first, just want to kick it around here. About the state of the Toronto Blue Jays. And, gentlemen, the Blue Jays had a wonderful run in May and the beginning of June, come home to a 2-3 homestand, then go on a 3-4 road trip. And they have been so tantalizingly close to the 500 level 9 times this year. 6 times they have absolutely gotten their asses kicked. And the other 3 times they've lost by 2 runs. And now they're 3 games under as they come home for this big stretch against the Orioles, Red Sox, Yankees, and Astros before the All-Star break. So, first thing we're going to talk about is a lot of people seem to be placing a whole lot of importance off of these next 2 weeks. Whoever wants to go first, go first. But how important are these 2 weeks really, and are they going to determine what the front office does after the All-Star break and before the trade deadline?
Well, to some degree, yes. And I don't think it's strictly going to be based on wins and losses. I think it's going to be really important in terms of what they look like over this stretch, too. Because if they're, 13 games before the All-Star break? It's also a pretty tough 9-game stretch coming out of the break as well. They get Detroit, Boston, and Cleveland, I believe. So that's a pretty meaningful stretch of games. And if they're, you know, say 12-10 and their life and death to just win those 12 games, you know, realistically, are you going to be able to sustain that to make up the ground over the long term and get past those teams and really make a mark? So I think how they look is going to be as significant as the record. And I don't think they were going to see a massive scale back if things don't go badly or things don't go well. But I think they're going to have to start making some decisions in terms of whether this is a core you want to continue with through 2018 or if you're going to take a strategic pullback and make some decisions that way.
One thing I would add to that is Shai talked about how the record might not be sort of the ultimate things that matters. And I think that that's true in the sense that teams ahead of them might mean a little bit more than games back at this point. We keep talking about, well, you know, the Blue Jays, they're not very far back. They're not very far back. It's 4.5 games. It's 3.5 games, whatever it is. But the bigger hump is to get in front of the 6-7 teams that are in front of them. You know, the Yankees and Red Sox probably are locking up 2 playoff spots, which means the Blue Jays are probably fighting for 1 with a ton of teams, 6-7, possibly even 8 teams in the mix for that. So it's about where those other teams line up in front of them as well as what their record is over the next little bit.
I have to say, I don't buy that at all. I think it's baseball, those things sort of tend to work themselves out over time. If the Blue Jays are good enough to make the playoffs, then they'll be better than the boatload of teams that are in front of them in the wild card race, right? I don't think the Yankees have locked up anything yet. I'm still not on board. There's still a lot of season left. But, you know, hockey, I think you've really got to worry about that, how many teams are in front of you, because of the loser points. And in baseball, without the loser points, I think you can pick up ground a little easier if you go on a nice little run, which obviously they need to do, right?
That's true, but also at the same time, that's dismissing the possibility that another team might go on that run. You know,
yeah,
Texas
can
terrible. Texas can go on that run. The Rays can go on that run. So they literally have to be better than Texas and the Rays and Baltimore and quite a few teams at this point. So I do think it matters how many teams are in front of them because they very literally have to be better than those teams. And, you know, those teams aren't inspiring, but neither of the Blue Jays been so far.
It's very true. But if you're a playoff team, you're going to be better than everybody else, and that shows over the long haul. So we will see. And the Blue Jays over the last 2 months do have the second best record in the American League, which is really hard to believe. I had to check like more than three or four times to make sure it was actually true. But over the last 2 months, they have the second best record in the American League when in the space of those 2 months, at various times, they've been without Sanchez, Happ, Liriano, Tulowitzki, Donaldson, Russ Martin, Steve Pierce, a lot of pieces. And for me, it's astonishing that they've managed to play as well as they have. And it's not crazy. It's like 30-23 or something like that over 2 months. For me, that's more reason for optimism than anything else, that they've managed to pick up ground at less than full strength, that they've managed to do more than tread water. Not that everybody's healthy now. Donaldson seems to be banged up. Steve Pierce is banged up again. Aaron Sanchez still isn't back. But for me, that's the biggest reason for optimism, and feel free to comment, both of you, is that you look at that record since, I don't know what it was, they were 6-14 or something, then only the Astros have been better in the American League.
I think the one, this is really sort of an eye of the beholder type of thing, is, their starting pitching is in the, still believe, the bottom third of the American League.
You want
right
a starting pitching stat? I looked this up yesterday. This is cool. And I don't mean to cut you off, but I did.
But you did.
It's what I do. You expect teams to have good starting pitching numbers when they win and bad starting pitching numbers when they lose. Obviously, one of the reasons you're going to lose games is poor ERA versus good ERA. But with the Blue Jays, it's insane. In their wins, going into yesterday, in their wins, the Jays have an ERA of 180. And in their losses, they have an ERA of 790. You would never expect that much of a dichotomy in there, but that's what they're dealing with.
Yeah, and you can't blame all that on Matt Latos and Casey Lawrence.
A little bit.
Although a good chunk of it.
Yeah, mostly Latos.
Right. So as I was saying before I was so rudely interrupted, they're bottom third in offense. They're bottom third in starting pitching. Their relief pitching has been okay. I think they're third or fourth last time I checked. And their
Friday aside, yeah.
And their defense from, I'm going to say, from a purely... Just from the eye test, has been much poorer this year compared to last year. And I know some of the analytics will tell you that. I don't want to argue this, especially with Nick here, but there's different defensive analytics. I'm not sure how much you want to trust them. But I think we can say that defensively they haven't been as good. So that can either correct over the final parts of the season, or maybe this is the year that they're having. And certainly the offense should skew up because they're not running out a lineup with, six replacement players in it. So there should be some more offense to come. The starting pitching should correct to some degree, but maybe there's a step backwards for some guys this year. And if you're going to be sort of middle in the pack in all those areas, are you going to have enough juice to get over the hump? And that's really an intriguing question to me. And they've got a tough lineup. They've basically got two spots where they can sort of upgrade positionally. Left field, although Steve Pierce is there, I'm not sure trade-wise if you're going to be able to do much better if Steve Pierce can be Steve Pierce. And then second base. So, they're in a bit of a tricky situation, and they're going to need a lot of guys to correct. So if you believe that all that stuff is going to correct over the final months of the season, then, yeah, you should be optimistic. But if you're like, well, maybe this isn't a year where guys hit their career norms, or a significant number of players don't hit career norms, and that could be a significant challenge for them to face.
I think Shai brings up kind of a great existential question, and you can make it a little simpler. Like, are the Blue Jays a good baseball team? And based on what we've seen, like you said, it's remarkable they've gotten to the record they've gotten based on some of these performances and some of the injuries they've had. But at the same time, there's a lot of guys who are performing poorly who I think it's reasonable to now start seriously questioning what they're going to do going forward. And Tulowitzki's a guy like that. Bautista's a guy like that. He hasn't been the same as he's been over the last year and a half. Liriano was very good for them in last September, but again, he's kind of going back to that inconsistency. So, like you said, is it what they do right now reflective of who those players are right now? I think in a lot of cases it is, but there will be some bounce back for a few guys.
Ben Nicholson-Smith and I were talking about this a couple of days ago, and we're saying, okay, so we're going to say New York, Boston, Cleveland, and Houston are probably the four best teams in the American League, at least right now. And I think that's pretty reasonable. But beyond that group, how many rosters would you take over the Blue Jays roster right now? And that's where the decision-making has to lie. You know, if you believe that the Blue Jays are better than the other clubs, then, yeah, absolutely, you keep pushing and you think, yeah, this is going to correct and they're going to do enough to get over the hump. But maybe, just as you were saying, you know, I talked to someone a while ago who had a hamstring injury mid-season, and that player said that they weren't right for the whole season. It was until they rested it for the full off-season, they didn't really recover. And to me, I think when you look at Troy Tulowitzki, it doesn't look like his legs are totally underneath him. And, you know, he's grinding through because that's a guy he is. But he may just simply not be healthy enough this year to get back to the career norm. So, I mean, if that doesn't correct, and if Josh Donaldson's in and out of the lineup because of different things, if Steve Pierce is always banged up, if Aaron Sanchez doesn't figure out the blister thing and the fingernail, there are a lot of different questions there, enough to make you think that, you know, even though they may be the fifth best team in the American League, they may not be able to survive and overcome the other ones.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. If all those bad things stay bad and there's no correction and guys don't get back to being who they are, because if they do, there are a lot of serious corrections that are about to happen, then they're in trouble. And we'll see. But I don't know if the next 20 games are going to reveal everything, but they may reveal whether or not the front office is going to go, hey, let's get a second baseman, or let's improve on left field, let's see if we deal Estrada and Liriano and guys like that.
Well, I think what's interesting is, you know, the Blue Jays may find themselves in a somewhat similar spot to where the Yankees were last year, where you're sort of in it, but you may not be really good enough to win it, or even if you do make it as a second wild card or whatever, you're not going to do much with it. And so, you know, I talked to Brian Cashman about this earlier this year, and it was really interesting. He just said, look, we're at Yankee Stadium. He said, look up there, and he pointed to the banners. It's like, we're about championships. We don't want to sneak in and be a wild card. And I didn't believe the team we had were going to be worthy of a championship. And so even though they were sort of in it, pulled back, they moved Miller, they moved Chapman, moved Beltran, and they restocked themselves. And, you know, the Blue Jays don't have an Aaron Judge waiting in the farm system. They don't have a Gary Sanchez waiting in the farm system quite to this degree. But I think, you know, if you look at Marco Estrada, provided he straightens himself up, continues to straighten himself out, Francisco Liriano, you know, Joe Smith, I mean, you can package some pieces, maybe even Jose Bautista. I mean, you could package some pieces and perhaps reset yourself and speed up any sort of potential retooling. And that's a hard decision to make when you've sold 2.5 million tickets and, you know, you've got a fan base that's deeply engaged across the country. And, you know, we see it on the road all the time, the way Blue Jay fans travel. I mean, this is a young, moneyed fan base that in a lot of ways is the envy of the other 29 teams, especially because of the youth and the engagement that you have across the country. You really risk it if you take a strategic step back. But that may be, for the longer-term health, that may be the smarter move.
The problem with that right now is the guys that have to sell, like you said, they're not doing well right now. You know, Estrada got off to a pretty good start, but now he's struggling. Is he going to probably correct the ship? You'd think so. But is he going to correct in time that by the time July 31st rolls around, he looks like someone people think's a top three starter? We don't know. What's Liriano worth right now? Like, not a ton. Joe Smith, his health is a question. Howell was a guy at the beginning of the year you saw as maybe a guy to sell. Obviously, that's no longer the case.
I totally forgot he was still on the team.
Yeah, he's a guy that's on the team. It's a problem because you'd think that retooling might be the best theoretical option for them. But at this point, it's hard to imagine what they have that's on that one-year term that's going to get them or a turn that's really going to help in the future.
Yeah, I think the one thing that helps with Estrada especially is the fact that he's performed so well in the postseason the past couple of years. That tends to carry a lot of currency. I remember talking to someone in 2015, and they felt that, you know, Estrada won two games that postseason. They were like, he probably just made himself $1 million a season with each of the per win with each of those with each performance in the postseason. So I mean, that kind of thing plays in the industry now. If he continues to be really poor into July, I think that's off the table. But And if he and Liriano don't correct to some degree, I mean, it's academic anyways, because the Blue Jays aren't going to be, they're going to be looking to do some sort of pullback too.
Right. And regardless, you're not going to get the kind of package that the Yankees got for Miller and Chapman for either one of those guys. So it's not going to be a full-scale restocking of the minor leagues. I would just say, you said there's no Aaron Judge coming up, and I completely agree with you. The Yankees didn't even know they had an Aaron Judge coming up, right? The guy hit 247 in AAA with, I think, fewer than 30 homers and struck out in half of his at-bats with the Yanks last year. So he's kind of an out-of-nowhere guy.
Well,
after a fashion.
There was pedigree.
It was a first-round pick.
There are a lot of people in baseball who loved him at the time, right? And look, the guy's development curve goes in different ways.
It's a lot. It's happened a lot faster, I think, than anybody expected.
Sure, but also he has physical characteristics that you just don't see. You know, like there was always that ability that he would come around this, maybe not this way, but in a serious way. And there's no one close for the Blue Jays who think, oh, that, you know, I guess Alford's got gifts, but there's not a lot of guys that have those sort of special gifts that could burst forth at any second.
Yeah, at least nobody above A-ball.
Well, and Telez is the closest guy, and all of a sudden he looks very, very blocked, you know, where you thought, all right, Justin Smoke's going to be terrible. They'll just hang on to him until they replace him, and Justin Smoke's probably going to be an all-star.
Yeah, Justin Smoke is probably, he's 80,000 votes behind Eric Hosmer right now, and you have three more days to vote, so go vote. We will open it up to questions in a minute. I just want to deal with one more thing, and that is Roberto Osuna, who couldn't pitch Friday night. He's got an anxiety issue, but he was able to go out there on the mound yesterday, and he looked terrific, struck out the side around an infield single, and it was really heartwarming, I think, for every Blue Jays fan to see that he was ready to do that, able to do that, and capable of doing it. I've been really gladdened to see how this thing has gone over, both in the media and with the fan base. I only heard from like a couple of idiots on Twitter. One guy says, oh, he just needs to go out and get laid. And another one, you know, just idiots out there. But I think it's incredible that he's been able to come out and say this, because honestly, I don't think 5 years ago you would ever hear a professional athlete say, I'm dealing with a mental issue, even though he didn't put it in those words. And certainly him pitching yesterday doesn't mean he's over it and he's fine and everything's okay right now. But the way the team has sort of surrounded him and supported him, and I think the way the fans seem to be understanding and supportive, I think has been great for him.
It's been outstanding. And it's something that I think is really hard for people who haven't experienced it to understand. And, you know, a locker room full of, you know, for lack of a better word, jocks, if it were or not, as it were, would not be the people you'd think of that would be the most open-minded about this. And I bet, you know, behind closed doors, maybe there are one or two guys that's questioning his resolve. But this is something that if people go through it and they really understand, you know, it's debilitating. It can feel like you have an anvil on your chest, like you can't get out of bed. It's as bad as anything you can experience from a physical standpoint. So the fact that he was able to open up about that, knowing that, you know, some people might consider it to be a weakness when mental toughness is stressed so much in baseball and in his role as closer too. So I think it's and he's 22. That's another thing. Like a guy that young to be mature enough to do that is outstanding, and the way the team seems to be supporting him so far is just unbelievable.
Yeah, obviously I agree with everything you said, Nick, and it's interesting. A long time ago, I did a story on a pitcher named Rob Bell. I don't know if you remember. It was with the Orioles and with the Rays for a while, and he had dealt with anxiety issues, but his issues weren't off the field, they were on the field, whereas he felt he couldn't throw pitches on the mound anymore. And I remember thinking he was a really interesting guy, and he'd gone through a lot of different techniques and counseling and things like that to overcome his anxiety issues and learn how to control them when he was pitching on the mound. And he had a very, very middling short career. But it always stuck with me about how we sort of take for granted all the different pressures. And it's not just, you know, what's going on the field. It could be what's going on off the field. And then you're in this high-pressure spot, and then, you know, whatever's happening elsewhere in your life can sort of pop up in other areas. And, you know, I don't want to speculate what Roberto's going through. We really don't know. None of us do. None of us are entitled to it. You know, it's his if he wants to share. It's if he wants to keep it private, certainly well within his rights. but he's going through something intensely personal in a very public forum, working in a very public job in which complete strangers feel they have a vested interest in him. So it's got to make it doubly difficult. And you know, kudos to him, and we obviously wish him all the best.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, you know, this anxiety, everyone's had it, but it's not the same, right? I can remember lots of different times being anxious for a reason, whether it's, you know, a family thing or a money thing or whatever. It's when you're anxious and you don't know why, that's a big, big difference. And I, you know, we don't know what's going on. But when it gets to be the level where you don't even know yourself what's going on, and as soon as said, he feels lost, he feels not himself, and that's a really, really tough thing for someone to go through. If you guys want to come in and find a seat, be our guests. Don't worry about walking in front of people. Don't need anybody standing around back there trying to get in. So go ahead and we'll wait a second.
It's not much of a visual anyway.
Yeah, seriously. There's obstructed view anyway.
I think one thing you brought up that's really interesting is a lot of people say about anxiety, well, everyone's had anxiety. And I think that's a problematic way of looking at it, because everyone hasn't had anxiety, not like one that would make you think you can't do your job.
No, not clinical, and that's why I'm suggesting.
No, I'm not suggesting that you said it, but I think that that's something that people say, like, oh, everyone's had anxiety, and so they think they understand. And it's a next level thing when you feel like you can't even do your job, and that's why this is something that people need to treat with this kind of gravity.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's a big deal, and it's wonderful that... That people are being so supportive. And it doesn't mean that if there's a safe situation tomorrow night, he'll be out there pitching. We don't know. And it does make it, you know, pragmatically, unfortunately, it makes it a little difficult for the Blue Jays, because if it's going to be a day-to-day thing, they've got to figure out how to best work their roster. And I don't know if that's something that you dive into here, but, I mean, I don't know what you do. You want to be supportive. You have to be supportive. His health is more important than whether or not he can pitch in a given day or whether or not the team wins or loses a game. But if he has a couple of bad days in a row, do you shut him down for 10 days? I mean, does that help with anything?
I think it's kind of pointless to speculate, because, I mean, we really don't know. I mean, the fact that the Blue Jays haven't put him on the disabled list yet makes you think that they have some sort of handle on what his availability will be like, because especially now that they've got, I believe they're back to a 7-man bullpen right now.
Yep.
Yeah, so, I mean, they're not going to go with six, especially knowing how they tend to like having extra relievers around. So they obviously have a reasonable amount of comfort that they're going to have him available in some way, shape, or form, but do they have to restructure their bullpen a little bit? Do they maybe put him into a less critical role where you can sub in different guys? Or do they just play it out day to day and then just say, hey, you know, Roberto's not available today, Tep, you're closing, and go that way? That is a bit tricky. But I think that if they were going to shut him down, they probably would have shut him down already.
Also, when you go into any game, there's a good chance you have pitchers A, B, and C who aren't available for whatever reason anyway. So, you know, Tapera's pitched the last 2 days. He can't go today. You know, whatever. Loop felt a little tight this morning. He's not going today. So I think you just treat it like that. Osuna's not available today.
Yeah, well, and we'll see. And hopefully it works out well for everyone concerned, but obviously most of all for Roberto. All right, we've got 20 minutes, maybe a little more. So if anyone wants to steer us in a particular direction or ask a question, we are happy to take them. Sure. Shoot. Could you guys up there hear that? Okay, cool. You first.
Okay, so that would be the nuclear option. That's if you get to the point where you think this core, a rejigged core, can't possibly compete in 2018. And the sense I at least have to this point is I don't think that's something that they're contemplating. Could they at some point, could that have happened? I mean, let's say they go... 22 games, let's say they go, you know, 5-17 over the next 3 weeks. At that point, maybe your calculus becomes a little bit different, but I would have a very hard time seeing them want to to give that up at this point. Now, in the off season, depending on how everything else plays out, maybe you think about it then. But right now, I just don't see it.
It's hard to make a decision that changes your next year so strongly because we don't know how 2018 is going to go. Maybe the Yankees have some injuries or the Red Sox do, and somehow it's their division to claim. And so the difference between having Donaldson and not having Donaldson can very much be being in contention or not being in contention. He's a guy who alone is worth, you know, you can quantify it, but specifically with WAR, but you can just say, you know, he's a 5 to 7 to 8 win player. He's one of the best players in baseball. So if you have Donaldson, it's almost like you have a chance to compete. So giving that up for 2018 is very difficult when we don't know exactly what 2018 is going to look like yet.
Yeah, I think so a lot. It's funny, I was on the radio in Baltimore today with one of their radio stations, and they were talking about Manny Machado's a free agent after 2018, and they're talking about maybe thinking about trading him and replenishing the organization that way. I do agree with Chai that that's the nuclear option. That's when there's, you know, you're done, you're finished, and you're willing to sacrifice the rest of this year and probably a lot of next, and maybe even the year after that to with the guys you're going to bring in. But I do think you get more in the off season, or you get different in the off season. You can get big league roster players, young players in the off season that you can't get during the season. And maybe that's another reason I think there are lots of reasons to not deal him, but I think maybe you maximize it in the winter if that's the way you decide to go.
The other thing to keep in mind is that I think everybody looks at it as like Josh Donaldson, you know, MVP type player, get a king's ransom for him, but the market for him probably isn't as robust as people might think, right? Because one, has to be someone who can afford his salary this year, can take on probably a roughly $25 million hit in what he's going to get in ARB next year, have the prospects, and then specifically have the need at third base. So, you know, you really have to thread the needle a little bit, and, you know, teams at potential, maybe the Mets, maybe the Cardinals, but beyond that, like, who's in desperate? You're not trading him to Boston.
Right. They're in desperate need, but, yeah, you're not trading him to Boston.
Right. I just don't think that's happening. Well, you know, I mean, theoretically it could. I just don't see it happening with this front office. But, you know, all those things have to kind of come together. So it's not as simple as, you know, it's easier to trade a pitcher because everyone can always make room for another starter. Everyone can always make room for another reliever. But teams can't all make room for a third baseman. You have to have that specific need.
Yeah, I think Shai is dead on that you might be disappointed with what you get. You know, he's a guy who's in his 30s now. People are starting to question the integrity of his legs based on this year going into next year. He makes a lot of money, so you got an older guy making a lot of money on a short term, potentially with some health questions. Yeah, you'll get something good, but you're not maybe getting that huge franchise retool defining package that you're hoping for.
Yes, sir. The question is about pushing the trade deadline back beyond July 31st into August. You hear it being kicked around the last couple of years, but usually kicked around by people like us. I haven't heard Rob Manfred bring it up at all.
I seem to remember at the All-Star game, there's always an availability with the commissioner and the head of the players union with BBWAA writers. And I seem to remember this coming up maybe 2 years ago and it being discussed as something that people have kicked around but haven't found any sort of consensus on. So I don't know if it's been advanced beyond that at this point. It is something that I actually thought about following up on this year at this year's All-Star Game.
Yeah, you might want to do that.
Yeah, maybe I will.
It's
story
interesting
ideas.
Because, you know, it was July 31st when there were 2 teams in the playoffs and when there were 4 teams in the playoffs, and now there are 10 teams in the playoffs, and it does change things. Maybe giving teams another 3 weeks and then you could have that frenzied window the last 10 days of August or something like that would allow teams to make better deals, more teams that are confident that they're in it, more teams that are sure that they're out of it.
Yeah, there's no doubt. The trade deadline's worse today than it was a few years ago because there's so much ambiguity around these wild card teams that are even below 500 a couple games think, okay, this could be our year, we could still make that run. And it's unfortunate for the game because I think the trade deadline used to be a little bit more of a beautiful thing than it is now, but
Yeah, I think it's a good idea. I don't know if it's going to happen.
I don't know. It was a lot of fun a couple of years ago, that trade deadline.
That wasn't technically a trade deadline, a couple of days before.
It was the whole week leading up to it. Yes, sir. Yeah, we have a show of hands here. How many people thought, what the hell were they doing when they Jay signed Justin Smoke to a two-year deal? Right. And I got a lot of phone calls on Blue Jays Talk asking, what the hell are they doing? And my answer was, look, it's a bench player salary, and they want him on the bench. They've got 10 free agents coming up, so they wanted to lock him up. But I think it's fair to say that Justin Smoke did not see this coming, that nobody saw this coming. Certainly Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins did not see this coming. But there were, you know, what Brandon Morrow used to refer to as the geek numbers. There were a couple that indicated that Smoke was a lot better than he had shown.
Well, yeah, his contact is always really good. When he makes contact with the ball, he hits the ball hard, and that's always been the case. The thing is that this year, he's making contact with the ball more often, so you're getting to see more and more of what he can do when the bat hits the ball. It's funny, when that deal came out, I was working with Sportsnet at the time and actually sent a text. It had to be this long. It was longer than this. My fingers are only so long. To Ben Nicholson Smith at the time, pitching this huge story, taking down the deal. Like, I could not have been more against it at the time it happened. Because to me, at that time, I thought, this is a guy hovering around replacement level. You can go year to year with him. If you desperately need someone at first base, just go year to year. You probably don't want to devote a bench position to a guy with no defensive versatility. And, you know, I've been wrong on things before, but I don't know if I've been as wrong on something as that one.
Well, not necessarily, because I think the consensus was that over the winter, had the Blue Jays not signed him, anyone could have picked him up on a minor league invite. You know, you didn't have to make this commitment. You could have gotten him for nothing in the offseason.
Yeah, I thought it was a great job by his agent to get that deal done at the time. I will tell you this, that Justin Smoke's entire tenure, the Blue Jays, is the product of their analytics department. When they first got him, Joe Sheehan, who at the time was the head of their analytics department, who's now their, now their assistant GM as well. He and Andrew Tinnish and a couple other members really wanted him. The Jays, you may remember, claimed him off waivers. Then they non-tendered him, and they had a possibility to re-sign him for $1 million ahead of the 2015 season. And Alex Anthopoulos is his want. There's this kind of phrase used in scouting. He's like, you pounding the table for this guy. You're going to stand on the table for this guy. And so Alex is like, you pounding the table for this guy? They're like, yeah, we're pounding the table. He's like, are you standing on the table for him? Standing on the table. And Alex is like, good, get on the table. And they're like, what? He's like, get on the table. And he's like, if you don't stand on the table, I'm not calling the agent and telling him we're doing the deal. So Andrew Tinnish gets up on the table, and I can't remember the other person. He gets up on the table, and then Joe Sheehan's the only holdout. He's like, Joe, get on the table. He's like, I'm not getting on the table, Alex. He's like, get on the table. He's like, I'm not calling the agent. You get on the table. So reluctant climbs on the table. Alex calls the agent. He does it. Now, the analytics numbers at the time were largely the defensive ones. And they had done some research that Smoke's wingspan and ability to pick balls would have cut the number of throwing errors made by Jose Reyes and Josh Donaldson down by about 50%, something along those lines. So they thought that was initially part of their pitch, but they also believed that there was some things, and this is proprietary that hasn't been shared with me, at least, that there were some things in his swing that they could do and some adjustments that he could make that might help him have the breakthrough. So anyways, once Alex left, Joe Sheehan got promoted, had a bit more of a voice. I think they were able to push a little bit more from the analytics side to make the case that they believed in Smoke. So, you know, there is a certain degree of fortune to this. I mean, you know, I don't think any of them predicted this, but a lot of them believe that there was a lot more in there, and they had some proprietary analytical data to support that.
And I don't want to be the person to undermine that story, because that's a really cool story and I like it. But the thing that you can say about almost any player acquisition is that people, like, I'm sure there's a million stories like that we never hear because the player doesn't turn out. So I would take that with a grain of salt in the sense that people have to feel strongly to be making these acquisitions. And the Blue Jays, like every other team in baseball, has picked up guys on a flyer like Smoke they think could do something, and more often than not, nothing comes of it, and this time it did, and that's pretty ridiculous.
Well, I do remember that you take me back to like a decade and a half ago when I remember the Blue Jays acquiring a player on waivers, a pitcher, and we talked to J.P. Ricciardi. We scrummed him on the field about it, and we said...
Doug Davis.
Doug Davis, a lefty, who actually went on to be pretty good for a couple of
for
other
Milwaukee,
teams.
Milwaukee and Arizona.
Yeah, and, not bad. And they got him from Texas, and J.P. just... You know, they saw these eight reporters coming out. What's, you know, tell us about Doug Davis. You picked up Doug Davis. Yeah, we're not doing backflips over this guy. That's what JP said to us. So nobody was pounding the table.
I think it was also that acquisition said we didn't want to go to a gunfight with a knife.
Yeah, because that's when John Wasden was starting games,
John,
right?
Way back Wasden. Yeah,
way back John Wasden. That was something. Yes, Red Sox hat. He wants to hear what we think about the Red Sox this year. Honestly, to be honest with you, and my stock answer when people call in and ask me about other teams, I always say this is Blue Jays talk, not Yankees talk or Red Sox talk or whatever. But the truth is, for me, and I don't know about you guys, I'm so in this bubble that I can't really pay attention to anybody else. You know, this is an everyday thing, and today is an off day, and it's a very rare thing, and it's great, and I'm not going to spend my off day watching the Boston Red Sox play. So, you know, I have a passing knowledge of what's going on with them. I know it took them a while to get started. I know their guys have been hurt. Hanley's hurt. Sandoval's not working out. Benintendi's fantastic. But I just don't have time, honestly, to evaluate too many other teams.
As it happens, I have a roommate who's a Red Sox fan, so I get a lot more of the Red Sox fed into my brain, maybe more than I'd like. There are a couple things about the Red Sox this year that I'd say overall they'd underperformed. I think it's an outstanding team that they've put together. But Chris Sale is just ridiculous. I mean, he's a pleasure to watch regardless of what hat you wear as a fan. But the guy this year for me for the Red Sox who's crazy is Craig Kimbrell. Because he's a guy that was sort of virtually perfect a few years ago in Atlanta, and we thought, you know, this is the peak of what a reliever can do. And then since then, a couple other guys have come along. But now you come back to it, and what Kimbrell's doing right now is absolutely insane. I think that not a lot of people are talking about it, but right now, you know, I don't want to lean on the analytics too much, but this season, over 2-win closer less than halfway through the year. And that is just ridiculous. So they're putting themselves in a position to win a lot of close games. And I think when guys like, you know, maybe David Price and guys who are underperforming a bit come back around, they could be that team to go on and win a lot of close games in a row, which gets you on those streaks of, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 wins. So I'd be very scared of the Red Sox.
I usually find get a handle on teams when you see them, and the Jays and Red Sox only played once, the three games, right?
Right, and the Red Sox
and that
are here
was back
on Friday.
In April. Right.
Yeah.
So... You know, everything I've heard from a distance, I have a couple writer friends who cover the Red Sox, so I hear a little bit of stuff from them. They're a really interesting team because offensively, they're not the same as what they were last year. I think they really miss Ortiz. I think they made a mistake by not getting Encarnacion because I think that was exactly what they needed there. The soft spot there is what happens if Price doesn't figure it out. And I think they really need Price to be David Price because otherwise I think there's some vulnerabilities. They've gotten some good performances out of their bullpen, but, you know, Thornburg didn't work out this year. Carson Smith didn't work out last year. I mean, they could have had, you know, they don't have Uehara anymore. They don't have that kind of top progression to Kimbrel. And, you know, Farrell just... By how good Kimbrel is, he's, you know, at risk of killing him by how much he's been using him because he's been so amazing too. So I think there's some interesting things going on there. But on talent alone, I think they're just miles ahead of everyone else in the division. And that even if those things don't go right, they'll still be good enough to win the division. But you know, are they Houston right now? I don't think they're Houston right now. I think I might like Houston at this point better than I do the Red Sox.
I think you have to, but there's still like over half a season to be played. There's a reason everybody handed the Red Sox the division when they got Chris Sale in December, even though Thornburg hasn't worked out. Carson Smith might be coming back, I think, within a month or two. We'll see. That's what they're telling you, 2 weeks. We'll see. We'll see. Let him throw a pitch in the major leagues.
There's been a few
first.
Stops and starts on that one so
yeah,
far.
There have. Yes, sir. The question is, why isn't Roy Halladay on the level of excellence yet? And yeah, he did get into the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame this weekend, and it was awesome. And honestly, I don't know. I don't know why. He is the obvious next one to be there. I don't know if they're waiting for him to get into Cooperstown.
I wonder if that might be it. This is just purely speculative, but the only the Jays, at least under Beeston, their only policy, they're only going to retire the numbers of Hall of Famers. If Roy Halladay is going to be a Hall of Famer, you'd retire 32 and go from there.
Do that at the same time,
right?
As
yeah, you wouldn't do two separate ceremonies.
Well, they did Alomar,
right? But
they were like 10 years apart. Halladay right. may not. Yeah, that's I mean, as good
like
a reason
what,
as any.
Like one year away, is the 2018 ballot. He's 2019 ballot.
I think he's on the ballot after the next one.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he's a first ballot Cooperstowner. I would hope so.
I would think so.
When I was up in St. Mary's, there were a lot of people asking me about that, and I was surprised by how many arguments were being made that it might take him 4 or 5 tries to get in. I don't see that myself.
If it were up to me, I would put him on first ballot, but I can see a scenario where he doesn't make it just because it's all about totals for some people.
Some people
like those big, sexy, round number totals, and he doesn't quite have that the way some other people do.
Fewer now than
the electorate has changed. It has changed.
Yeah. But there were a lot of comparisons that I heard to Mike Messina. Mike Messina is not in the Hall of Fame. I think of Roy Halladay as much, much, much better than Mike Messina.
100%. I mean, I don't think you can make any sort of reasonable argument that he wasn't the best pitcher of his generation.
Right.
Right? I mean, he's completely dominant in the American League East at that time, and that was in the American League East, was the complete meat grinder, the real Yankee Red Sox teams. I mean, I just don't see how you can make a, except for like the real old school fossil kind of voter who, you know, sees it like, oh, he's not Cy Young, so he's not getting in on the first ballot. Like, I mean, I just don't see how you don't put him on there.
I think wins and Canada are the only two factors that play some role. Like he played vast majority of his career here.
Because the way the electorate's changed, I don't think wins are going to be the same. And plus, like, 200 is the new 300, right?
And he had, what, 213 or something like that?
Yeah.
And Shai's the only one here who actually has a vote. So, but we'll see. Yeah, I do expect him to go in on the first ballot. I think Kevin wants us to stop now. We'll stop now.
Please stop.
Thank you very much for this. Thank you for showing up. Keith Law is actually in the building, and he's going to come up and talk to you after we take a little break. But enjoy the rest of the evening. Thanks very much.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.